Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
MMH's Kit Brudimus given Year of the Nurse Award by Caitlin Randall. Kit Brudimus, Chief Nursing Officer at Midland Memorial Hospital, was recognized as one of 20 nurses in Texas who went above and beyond during the Year of the Nurse. The award was given by the Texas Nurses Foundation and Texas Nurses Association to 20 nurses for their dedication, perseverance, compassion, and commitment to Texans during an exceptional year. The World Health Assembly designated 2020 the International Year of the Nurse and Midwife in honor of the 200th anniversary of Florence Nightingale's birth and to celebrate nurses after a year serving during the COVID-19 pandemic. I am humbled and truly honored to be named one of the 2020 Year of the Nurse recipients, Brudimus said in an acceptance speech. I can confidently say the Year of the Nurse did not go as planned and was what many of us will say is one of the most challenging years we ever experienced. Brudimus served as Chief Nursing Officer and Vice President of Nursing during the coronavirus pandemic and frequently delivered updates and answered questions during the hospital's daily, then weekly press conferences. He also organized events for the community to encourage nurses and help staff stay motivated and spoke before the Midland City Council about recommended COVID-19 protocols. In a year of disruption, fear, and uncertainty, nurses stepped up and epitomized compassion and courage, Brudimus said. Finding the power in our purpose is what gives our lives meaning and provides us with the strength to get up every day and keep fighting. I know that our devotion to helping others is what enables us to endure all the pain and suffering we are exposed to. Brudimus is a native Midlander who has been with MMH since 2008 when he started as a nurse in the emergency department. He received a doctorate in executive nursing from Texas Tech and has previously received the Modern Healthcare's Rising Star in Nursing Award, American Organization for Nursing Leadership Early Careerist Award, and AONL Professional Young Voices Award. AAA Texas. Most expensive gas this week is in Midland, by Stuart Doreen. Midland is home to the most expensive average price of gasoline of any larger metropolitan area in the state. AAA Texas reported Thursday that the price in Midland increased 6 cents to move the average to $2.96, still below $3 a gallon, but more than the other 26 larger metropolitan areas. Odessa was second on the list with an average of $2.94. The average across the state increased to $2.75. AAA Texas reported that Texas had practically no impact on supplies due to the Colonial Pipeline shutdown and discouraged panic buying. Since January 1, the average price in Midland is up 89 cents. The state average has increased 81 cents. Hi. This is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, May 14, 2021. Section A. Things to do, places to go. Regal Tall City Theaters are welcoming back guests after temporarily closing their doors due to the COVID pandemic. Theaters in Midland and Odessa will open Friday with a wide range of health and safety measures that include wearing a face mask while in the theater lobby, auditoriums, and restrooms. Masks can be removed only while eating and drinking while seated in an auditorium. Regal employees will provide masks to guests who arrive at the theater without one. The theater will open with Spiral, Wrath of Man, and Those Who Wish Me Dead, along with a full slate of additional titles. Future releases include A Quiet Place Part 2 and F9. City announces movies in the parks schedule. The City of Midland Parks and Recreation Division announced Thursday the 2021 Movies in the Parks series. This summer, the city will show 7 movies. The first movie will be shown at Centennial Park on May 21st. The movie being shown will be Croods, A New Age. The other dates and locations for the movies will be Sonic the Hedgehog, June 4th, Hill Park, Aladdin, June 18th, Dennis the Menace Park, Frozen 2, July 9th, C.J. Kelly Park. Onward, July 23rd, Beale Park. Trolls World Tour, August 6th, Hogan Park. Toy Story 4, August 20th, Centennial Park. Each movie will start at dusk. Don't forget your lawn chairs. For a complete list of movies in the park, please visit midlandtexas.gov/movies. COM Aquatics Community Day. City of Midland Aquatics will hold its Community Day on Saturday from 8 to 11 a.m. Adults interested can take advantage of six-week adult memberships for $25 and have access to all programs COM offers. From 2 to 4 p.m., kids can have a fun 2 hours at the pool, take part in COM swim and dive team tryouts, and have access to discounts for junior camps and swim or dive team memberships. Beer Garden to host Basin Beer Brews and Chews event. The Beer Garden will be hosting the Basin Brews and Chews event on June 5th. The Beer Garden is teaming up with Panchuco's Food Truck and Texas Tap Company for a food and beer pairing event. Menu and ticket information will be announced. Korean War veteran B.J. Rice passed away Tuesday, May the 11th in Carrollton. Viewing will be held on Friday, May 14th from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Nellie Pickleham Welsh Funeral Home. Graveside service will be held on Saturday, May 15th at 11 a.m. at Rest Haven Cemetery. Jim Osborne, 75, of Midland, passed away on May 9th after a brief illness. Per his request, no services will be held. Cremated ashes will be scattered at a later date. Arrangements are made by the American Heritage Funeral Home. Joe David Williams, Jr. was born September 22nd in San Angelo and passed away May the 9th. Memorial service will be held 2 p.m. Saturday, May 15th at Nellie Pickleham Welsh Funeral Home. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickleham Welsh Funeral Home. Mary Louise Lewis of Richardson passed away on Saturday, May the 8th. Visitation took place Monday, May the 10th at Thomas Funeral Home in Wimberley. A graveside service took place Tuesday, May the 11th. Arrangements were under the direction of Thomas Funeral Home. Sue Shepherd Kerr died May the 11th. A graveside service will be held Friday, May 14th at 10:30 a.m. at Fairview Cemetery. Memorial service will be held Friday at 1 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickleham Welsh Funeral Home. Rosa Reyes, 75, of Midland, passed away May the 12th. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Monday, May 17th at Nellie Pickleham Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, May the 18th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickleham Welsh Funeral Home. Teresa Denise Smith passed away May 3rd. A funeral service will be held May 14th at Mount Rose Baptist Church at 11 a.m. Interment will immediately follow at American Heritage Cemetery.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, May 14th, 2021. Section A. City strikes out again in public records legal fight against the Odessa American. Appellate court ruling clears way for state district judge to decide newspaper's claims. The city of Odessa has lost its second legal battle against the Odessa American's efforts to force the municipality to comply with state freedom of information laws. In a unanimous ruling issued Thursday, the 11th Court of Appeals in Eastland shot down the city's argument that a lower court judge should not be allowed to hear and rule on the newspaper's lawsuit that alleges the city has been violating open records laws by stymieing timely and complete access to public police reports and probable cause affidavits. Authoring the ruling on behalf of the three justice panel, which heard oral arguments 2 weeks ago, Chief Justice John M. Bailey concluded, viewing the factual allegations in the newspaper's petition as true, and construing the petition liberally in support of the newspaper's intent, we conclude that the newspaper has adequately pleaded a claim for mandamus relief. We overrule the city's sole issue on appeal. The lawsuit now goes back to visiting State District Judge Rodney Satterwhite, who ruled in October that the case should be allowed to proceed. The city initially filed a motion to dismiss the newspaper's lawsuit, arguing the judge did not have jurisdiction to adjudicate the matter. But Satterwhite denied the motion by the city, which then chose to launch a baseless appeal to the Eastland Court. The appeal served only to delay the final ruling sought by the American in October and obstruct the American's suit to enforce the Texas Public Information Act. In its appeal, the city argued that the newspaper failed to sufficiently plead factual allegations in its case filings, and therefore the city should enjoy sovereign immunity from the lawsuit before a state district judge. But the appellate court did not buy the argument, asserting in its written ruling, "The newspaper has sufficiently pleaded factual allegations in support of its claim that the city refuses to supply public information." The Eastland Court cited several specific examples of public records law violations alleged by the American. In reacting to the ruling, OA publisher Patrick Canty said, "We are very pleased that the justices have affirmed what the trial judge had already determined. We believed all along that our case should be quickly adjudicated once and for all by a judge in Ector County. Now that can finally happen." John Bushin, the Odessa American's lead attorney in the lawsuit, said it will probably be another 30 to 60 days before the lawsuit comes back before Satterwhite. "I think we would just want to say the Odessa American is glad to hear that the Eastland Court of Appeals unanimously agrees with District Judge Satterwhite that the district court obviously has the power to rule on this case as the Public Information Act commands," Bushin said. In a statement released late Thursday, City Attorney Natasha Brooks stated, "There has not been a hearing on the merits of the case. The opinion from the 11th Court of Appeals simply determined that the trial court has jurisdiction to hear the facts of the case. The City Council will now decide how to proceed." The OA filed its lawsuit against the city more than a year ago, alleging the municipality was violating the Texas Freedom of Information Act by requiring the newspaper to file formal Freedom of Information requests in order to obtain police reports and probable cause affidavits, records that have always been readily and promptly available to any member of the public. The process resulted in delays in the release of the public records, which oftentimes contained information that was redacted. The newspaper's lawsuit seeks a writ of mandamus by the court, which essentially is a ruling that forces the city to comply with state open records laws. ECISD gathering equity and discipline data. Although it's been out of the headlines, Ector County ISD continues to work on its equity and discipline issues with a survey that will help inform its decisions moving forward. About a year and a half ago, the district presented data to the ECISD Board of Trustees. One of the data elements pointed to the fact that 4% of our students in ECISD are African American, and yet they made up almost 50% of the students who were in our alternative education program, Murray said in his media call Wednesday. In addition, we discovered some of our African American students were disproportionately disciplined as a part of that process. It raised some alarm, not only with district personnel, but with our trustees. So we started to unpack that problem, and we created an equity committee within the system, Murray added. That committee has been meeting for about a year, working on different ways for us to address all forms of equity within ECISD. We're now asking our families and students and teachers, what are the experiences of your children? We want to make sure that our special ed children are having their needs met. We want to make sure that our dyslexic children have their needs met. Our students of poverty. We have a variety of children in ECISD, all different, all unique, and we want to make sure that all their needs are being met. The survey, Murray said, is a chance for the district to listen to its community, teachers, and students. Then we'll use those data to help inform the decisions that we make as an organization moving forward. The survey was sent to parents last week, and parents have another couple of weeks to fill it out. Then we'll spend the summer analyzing those survey data. We're looking at our academic data, our discipline data, our access data, Murray said. We want to make sure that every student in ECISD has access to rigorous coursework, high-quality materials, great teachers, and ultimately success in life. On a separate topic, Murray said ECISD is excited to announce that it is celebrating the classes of 2020 and 2021 in the next few weeks. The class of 2020 was not able to have a traditional graduation experience due to COVID-19. We promised them that we would provide that for them. So next week, we will be hosting graduation ceremonies for the 5 high schools, and we will welcome the class of 2020. We would like to inform all 2020 graduates that if you are interested in participating in that experience, you need to contact your school. Each of the high school websites has a registration page, Murray said. Simply let us know that you're going to be in attendance. We want to be able to make plans for you. Those graduations are coming up next week. Along the same lines, Murray said one of the things the district encourages students to do is to not let high school graduation be their final destination. We encourage all of our students to engage in some form of post-secondary experience, whether it be service in the military, a technical school, or 2-year or 4-year college or university. We want to make everything available to all of our kids. So this week, we are going to begin celebrating the selections that they've made. So students in ECISD, if you selected a college or university or a branch of the military, this week, you're going to find a sign on your campus, a yard sign, celebrating the colleges and universities and technical schools and branches of the military that our kids have selected by. Friday, he added, all those signs will be posted outside each of the high schools. We invite the public to drive by over the next couple of weeks, any of our high schools, to see all of the different choices and options that were presented to our students this year and to see where they're headed off to next, Murray said. The primary reason students give for not attending an institution after high school is money. We have invested quite a bit of time. Our counselors have spent an inordinate amount of time encouraging our kids to complete the FAFSA, which is the free application for federal assistance. There's lots of money available through scholarships and grants to our students, and that form is a required element to receive those college scholarships and those grant dollars that are available. We're working with all of our high school seniors to make sure that form is completed so kids have access to money. In addition to that, we've noticed that we have quite a few kids who make it to a college or a university or the military. In other words, they enroll, but they don't last. They don't stand the test of time. They drop out after the first, Murray said. Last year, we developed in response to that an office called the Student Success Office. It's really the concept of to and through. We as an organization want to make sure that our high school students get to the next level, to a college or university, to a technical school, or to the military. And at the same time, we want to make sure they get through it. He added that some students need extra support or additional funding sources. We developed an office that specially focuses upon our graduates in helping them for the next 6 years as they travel through those post-secondary experiences. So that support system was put in place just this year, Murray said. Online registration is currently available for those attending ECISD in the coming school year. We're asking all ECISD families, if your children are going to be part of our organization next year, we need to hear from you. We need to ready our classrooms, hire our teachers, and make sure we have the right resources and materials in place, Murray said. In order to properly plan for every student in ECISD, we need to know that you're coming, and our online registration process is how you let us know that you're going to be with us next year. That website is www.ectorcountyisd.org, or they can visit any one of the schools. It doesn't have to be your school, and they can provide a chance to sign up. Law enforcement agencies gather to remember fallen officers, by Royal McGregor. Members of local law enforcement agencies gathered Thursday morning to pay tribute to officers who died in the line of duty over the past year. The memorial service took place at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home as it was part of National Police Memorial Week. Odessa Police Department Chief Michael Gerke explained during the memorial service that this is the most important speech he gives every year, and it's the most important event he attends every year. We are honoring the memory of those people, those police officers, those law enforcement officials who have made the ultimate sacrifice, Gerke said. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths echoed the importance of the memorial service. We are privileged to be here to honor those individuals, Griffiths said. OPD Lieutenant Caleb Lacey announced the roll call of the 2020-21 Texas Fallen Officers. There were a total of 89 officers detailed in the roll call. The final law enforcement officer listed in the program was Harris County Deputy Sheriff Alexander Guazd. According to the Officer Down memorial page, Guazd died from complications as the result of contracting COVID-19 in the line of duty. Gerke said COVID-19 has ripped through law enforcement agencies throughout the country. The 2020 memorial service was held virtually due to COVID-19. Gerke said it's great to get back to a slight form of normalcy that allows the memorial service to take place in person. It's nice to come back together again, Gerke said. It's nice to see those people that we haven't seen in a year. In addition to the 89 fallen officers, the 9 local law enforcement officers who were honored were OPD Corporal G.T. Toll, OPD Officer Scott Smith, OPD Corporal Arlie Jones, OPD Corporal Scott Gardner, OPD Corporal Abel Marquez, Ector County Sheriff's Office Deputy Thad West, Lubbock Police Department Officer Rodney Kendricks, Midland County Sheriff's Office Sergeant Michael Naylor, and Midland Police Department Officer Nathan Heidelberg. COVID-19 news. Ector County, 17,297 total cases, 371 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 1 student, 0 staff. Midland County, 17,541 total cases, 268 deaths. Texas, 2,922,680 total cases, 50,785 deaths. U.S., 32,643,851 total confirmed and 580,837 deaths. COVID-19 vaccine clinics. The Texas Army National Guard will be conducting COVID-19 vaccination clinics this month on the following dates and locations, starting at 8 a.m. until they run out of vaccine. Today, Pfizer, Northside Baptist Church, 100 West 50th. May 19th, J&J and Moderna, Westminster Presbyterian Church, 4901 Maple. May 23rd, J&J and Moderna, Westminster Presbyterian Church, 4901 Maple. May 27th, J&J and Moderna, St. James Missionary Baptist Church, 2212 East 11th. Quick hits. Free car seat inspections. TxDOT is offering free car seat inspections from 8 to 10 a.m. today at the Midland County Horseshoe Arena, 2514 Arena Trail in Midland. TxDOT says 2 out of every 3 car seats are used incorrectly. Face masks and social distancing will be required during the inspections. Appointments are required. To book an appointment, call 432-498-4071. Odessa sales tax revenue dips. The city of Odessa recently received its May sales tax check in the amount of $4,930,789.27. This amount includes the economic development sales tax of 0.25 cent. The city of Odessa will receive $3,944,631.42, and the Odessa Development Corporation will receive $986,157.85. The city saw a decrease in sales tax revenue, with May's sales tax revenue total of $3,944,631.42, which reflects a decrease of $664,225.93, or 14.41%, compared to May 2020. The Ector County Hospital District received $3,668,808, a decrease of $368,991 during the same period last year. Year-to-date, total sales tax revenue for fiscal year 2020-21 is up 13.93%, or $3,252,285.19, as compared to budgeted amount expected at this point in the fiscal year. The 2020-21 year-to-date amount is below the previous fiscal year-to-date amount by $8,730,198.10, or 24.71%. The city has budgeted $36 million in net sales tax revenues for this current fiscal year. Sales tax revenue is generated by sales tax revenue from 2 months prior to collection, so May's collection is based on March sales. Woman charged with assaulting husband with kitchen knife. A 45-year-old woman was arrested after she reportedly assaulted her husband with a kitchen knife. Alicia Mrozek was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony. The reported assault happened at 5 p.m. May 9th in the 7,000 block of Kate Reed Drive, an OPD probable cause affidavit stated. Officers reportedly made contact with the victim, identified as Greg Mrozek, who stated that his wife, Alicia, started a disturbance after she caught him recording her conversations. Greg Mrozek stated during the disturbance his wife struck him on the left of his face that knocked his glasses off. He stated that his wife grabbed a kitchen knife with a black handle and a silver blade. The affidavit stated she was swinging it in a slashing and stabbing motion. Greg Mrozek reportedly told officers that while his wife was swinging the knife, he put his arms up to protect himself and that she slashed his right forearm. He pointed out the kitchen knife used in the assault, and officers saw the blade on the kitchen floor with dried blood on the blade. Officers also saw video surveillance footage of Alicia Mrozek chasing her husband outside of the residence with a sharp pointed object in her left hand that was consistent with Greg Mrozek's story, the affidavit stated. Alicia Mrozek was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. She had one bond totaling $30,000 and posted bail May 11th. Jail records show. ODC board member honored for service by Federico Martinez. Longtime community advocate Gene Collins, who has been instrumental in attracting many major developers to Odessa over the years, was recognized by the Odessa Development Corporation during its meeting Thursday. Collins recently announced that he was stepping down from his ODC board seat due to health issues. ODC board president Tim Edgman, who presented Collins a large plaque in recognition of his contributions, noted that Collins has been a champion not only for attracting developers to Odessa, but also challenging the ODC and city to improve diversity efforts. "You were very instrumental in the Nacero project," said Edgman, referring to a recently announced plan by a Houston-based gas manufacturing company that intends to construct a $6.5 to $7 billion natural gas processing and production facility in Penwell. Collins thanked his peers on the board and encouraged them to continue working together, even if they don't always agree. "Sometimes you have to butt heads, but butt heads in brotherhood," said Collins, an ordained minister and local branch president of the Odessa NAACP. "I thank you all for the opportunity to serve on the ODC. I hope that I was able to make a contribution." Collins, a self-avowed environmentalist, was active in development projects even before joining the ODC. Some of those projects have included the development of the Gertrude Bruce Center, Main Street Odessa, the Frederick Douglass Park, the West Texas HIV/AIDS Consortium, and the creation of the Odessa Revolving Loan Program. In other ODC updates, Wesley Burnett, Director of Economic Development for the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, told the board that the Nacero project is quickly moving forward. Nacero officials have informed him that they are close to having the project's financing completed and are close to selecting a project developer. Local news roundup. Shopping Expo. The West Texas Shopping Expo has been scheduled from 4 to 8 p.m. today and from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday at Fiddlesticks Farms, 5610 East County Road, 120, Midland. Admission is $5 at the door. Ages 12 and under are free. Moonlight Market. Medical Center Hospital has scheduled a family and pet-friendly Moonlight Market season event from 6 to 8 p.m. May 21st on the corner of 2nd and Golder on the MCH campus. There will be food trucks, fresh baked breads and pastries, jams, jellies, salsa, honey, crafts, live music, and more. Visit tinyurl.com/UMFSKWBN. Concert. The Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale will present E.T. the Extraterrestrial in concert 7:30 p.m. May 22nd at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center in Midland. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. For tickets or information, visit tinyurl.com/5D9HFXXC or call 800-514-3849. Box office hours are from 1 to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. Student enjoys early college high school environment. Special to the Odessa American by Rebecca Bell. Executive Director of Institutional Advancement at Midland College. Last year, for one of his Midland College honors projects, Caleb Goylando interviewed retired U.S. Congressman Mike Conaway. "It was a great experience," Goylando said. "I've always been intrigued by politics. In fact, I guess you might say that I have a passion about government. Texas government was one of my favorite college courses so far." Goylando is in the 11th grade at Early College High School at MC. As such, he is participating in an accelerated high school curriculum and also taking college courses. When he graduates from high school in May of 2022, he also plans to graduate from MC with an associate degree. "I applied to ECHS at MC when I was in the 8th grade at Goddard Junior High. That year, I was denied acceptance, but I was determined to get into the program. I loved the idea of being academically challenged. After hearing about ECHS at MC and how I could get both a high school diploma and college degree at the same time, I knew that was the program for me. So the next year, while I was a 9th grader at Midland Freshman, I applied again as a transfer student. Thankfully, I was accepted as a sophomore." Goylando said that he has not regretted his decision for a minute. "I love the fast-paced environment," he exclaimed. "It's also given me an opportunity to make friends outside of just my age group. Through my college courses, I've participated in learning teams and discussion groups with traditional-aged college students as well as adults. After I got past the intimidation of being the youngest in the group, I found that we all work well together. Because of where we are in life, we have different outlooks, but that just makes our discussions more interesting." Goylando is currently taking 4 college courses: College Algebra, Composition 2, United States History 2, and Jazz Band. "The professors are great," he said. "They don't just teach the material. They really get involved in their teaching and help relate the subject matter to students' own interests. I'm not sure if it's this way at every college, but I am really liking the college experience at MC." 2 of Goylando's favorite college professors are Meg Makowski, who taught him geography, and Rabban Bewley, his current music teacher. Goylando isn't sure about his plans for a college major. He said that he likes science, especially microbiology and studying about infectious diseases. "I may go into public health, but I also like politics and debating," he explained. "I read the Washington Post regularly and the Wall Street Journal occasionally. Right now, I'm taking as many classes as I can in both science and government to determine the direction I want to take after completing my associate degree next May. I'm very interested in transferring to a college in the Washington, D.C. area. I visited D.C. three or four years ago with my mom and really enjoyed it. 2 of the schools that I like are University of Maryland and George Washington University." Goylando is an only child. His father, Sebastian Goylando, was in the U.S. Army, and Caleb was born on a military base in Italy. When he was 2 years old, his father was transferred to Fort Hood in Killeen. His parents later divorced, and Caleb moved to Midland with his mother, April Franco. She attended Midland Independent School District Elementary Schools, Anson Jones Elementary, and Washington STEM Academy. One of Goylando's favorite pastimes is playing the violin, something he's been doing since he was in the 6th grade. In fact, as a member of the Midland College Jazz Band, Goylando plays the violin, a rather unusual instrument for a jazz band. Evidently, the addition of a violin to MC's jazz band is working quite well. "I met Caleb a couple of semesters ago," Rabban Bewley, MC department chair of music, recalled. "He was looking for an opportunity to play, and it dawned on me that I had a really nice ballad in the folder for jazz band. It made perfect sense that a string part would be a great addition to the ballad, so I wrote a part And the rest, as they say, is history. Caleb really took to the style, and it encouraged me to find other charts in which strings could play a role. For instance, this year we're doing Mr. Blue Sky, an ELO, Electric Light Orchestra, tune from the 70s. Gorlando said he also loves to run. He currently runs a mile in 8 minutes. As an ECHS at MC student, Gorlando said that the advice he would give other students in the program is, don't fall behind. Keep on track and enjoy it. I certainly am. Virtual AVID Celebration coming up by Ruth Campbell. Ector County ISD's AVID Celebration will be virtual again, with a video planned for release at 1:30 p.m. today and broadcast on Facebook noon Sunday. We've been in the process of having senior experience, which this year is all based around Pay It Forward, said District AVID Director Amy Anderson. AVID stands for Advancement Via Individual Determination. Its mission is to close the achievement gaps by preparing all students for college readiness and success in a global society, the district's AVID website said. Anderson's daughter, Abigail, is a senior this year, and she got to experience the senior experience, which involved an art project that showed the impact one small gesture can have on people's lives. I really enjoyed it, Abigail Anderson said. I think that it definitely was something that let us be free. It kind of felt like before, pre-COVID. We were all able to get together and do an activity together that was fun and engaging. Abigail, 18, said she plans to attend Angelo State University to study biology. She hopes to become a doctor of some sort. I'm not sure if I want to go all the way and become a surgeon or be a pediatrician. I'm just going to go with the flow, she added. Abigail Anderson noted that she has found AVID very helpful. Her first year of the program was her freshman year of high school. It taught me a lot of different study tips and how to manage my time and just keep myself organized in my school life and outside my school life, she said. She has an older sister and a younger sister. Complex Community Federal Credit Union, a stalwart partner of AVID, helped them put the video together. Former AVID student Matthew Alvarez of CBS 7 will be the MC, and there are several guest speakers, Anderson said. We're excited to have him back as part of our alumni that are giving back to our seniors and helping them create this celebration, she added. Complex Community will be awarding scholarships, and the two seniors selected to give speeches for graduation will get a $500 scholarship. As AVID always does, each campus will receive Kindles that will be raffled off for those students exhibiting behaviors and skills and character that support AVID. They will get a chance to win a Kindle as part of the middle and high school campus celebrations. Seniors participate in the senior experience with the theme of Pay It Forward. That art project that she's talking about is going to be an 8-foot monument for the seniors of 2021. Our class of seniors for 2020. Their senior experience art is going to be installed at UTPB, but COVID just put a little bit of a delay on that, so they may be going up at the same time, Amy Anderson said. But we just, again, want to have our seniors to have the opportunity to come together as a collective cohort of ECISD alumni that are moving on and kind of leave a little piece of them. They can come back and tell their kids, like, when I was a senior, we did this. Anderson said this is the second year that a piece of art has been created and installed somewhere in the community. She said there are 7,077 students in AVID. We have 5 elementary schools that do it school-wide, so there are campuses that implement Avid K through 5. And what's very interesting is that we also partner with both Odessa College and UTPB, who both utilize Avid, Amy Anderson said. She added that there are plans to implement Avid on more campuses. It's definitely a possibility. Pre-pandemic, Avid piloted a leadership coaching program where community members mentored the students at Bonham Middle School, and plans were to scale up to all the middle schools. We are in the second session of our middle school leadership coaching, and we are doing that virtually. We did one cohort in the fall, and now we're in the second in the spring, only at Bonham. Currently, we have about 30 students. We take about 3 of those students and we pair them with a community coach, a volunteer from our community, with an ECISD host to help support the technology and just have a well-rounded group to be able to serve our kiddos. In case anything comes up, they have an ECISD host there to help. Amy Anderson said conducting the sessions virtually was different. We learned a lot of things, so we've refined that and changed a few processes. It is going to be better this time, but it's difficult. You would think it would be easier, but it's difficult to build those relationships and capacities in a very short time over a Zoom with a sixth grader, Amy Anderson said. She noted that they have had to develop Zoom etiquette. When they come into a Zoom meeting, they should come in on mute and they should stay on mute unless they're speaking. Then they should turn their camera on so everybody sees everyone and introduce themselves. I did not take a group because I'm trying to manage all the groups. So my role is to make sure that all the coaches are there first. We ask them to log in at 12 and then they can have a little prep time before the kids get in. The kids get in at any time between 12:10 and 12:15. They have a 30-minute session with them. I pop into the rooms, take attendance, and then closer to the end of that session, I drop a link and for reflection so that everybody has the opportunity to let me know how the session went, what went well, what didn't go so well. And then I can make adjustments before the next session if there are adjustments to be made, Amy Anderson said. At the end of the year, she said they will have a celebration where the coaches drive through the Bonham parking lot. There was a celebration at the end of the fall semester as well. Remaining COVID-friendly, the coaches will drive through the parking lot again this spring, honking their horns and flashing their lights. The students will come out and stand and make posters to thank the coaches. Students will get a t-shirt that has Avid Leadership on it. The coaches will get a t-shirt also. Obituary for Friday, May 14th. Norisha Ruth Sims. Norisha Ruth Sims, 82, of Odessa, passed away Tuesday, May 11th. She was born November 7th, 1938, in Sheffield, to Jeff L. and Billy G. Smith. She married Floyd Sims in 1957, and they celebrated their 64th anniversary this year. Ruth is preceded in death by her parents, Jeff L. and Billy G. Smith, in-laws, Robert Sims, Catherine and Bill Coffey, a nephew, David Smith, brother-in-law, Frank Hudgens. She is survived by her husband, Floyd Sims, sons, Robert Sims and wife, Susan, and Mike Sims, 3 grandchildren, 1 great-grandson, her brother, Jeff Smith, and wife, Elaine, of Valiant, Oklahoma, sisters, Theda Allen, of Del Rio, and Elaine Hudgens, of Palestine, and numerous nieces, nephews, and friends. Graveside services were held Friday, May 14th, at Sunset Memorial Gardens, with Tim Boeington officiating. Services are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Midland. To place online condolences, please visit willowbrk.com. Death Notices. Mary Jane Apodaca Renteria. Mary Jane Apodaca Renteria, 58, died Wednesday, May 12th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Shanna Jawan Bailey. Shanna Jawan Bailey, 57, of Odessa, died Thursday, May 13th. A funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Tuesday, May 18th at the Northside Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Mary Marjorie Baxter. Mary Marjorie Baxter, 98, of Odessa, died Tuesday, May 11th. A celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, May 15th at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Burial will be held privately. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Louis Charles Glover. Louis Charles Glover, 57, of Odessa, died Sunday, May 1st. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. May 15th at Golden Gate Funeral Home in Dallas. Arrangements are by Golden Gate Funeral Home of Dallas. Belen Hernandez Madrid. Belen Hernandez Madrid, 68, died Sunday, May 10th in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Victor Abel Valles. Victor Abel Valles, 49, of Odessa, died Wednesday, May 12th. Mass will be celebrated at 10:30 a.m. Monday, May 17th at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at the Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Letter to the Editor. Former MHS art teacher needs new kidney, by Larry Gilbert. I am Larry Gilbert, a retired Midland High School art teacher who taught for 37 years. I now live in McKinney with my family. This is probably the most difficult letter I have ever written. You see, I am in need of a kidney transplant, and I need to let my friends and family know about my condition. Since March 2020, I have been at a dialysis clinic 3 times a week for 4 hours each time, because a transplant would offer me more freedom and the ability to live a longer, healthier, and more normal life. I was evaluated and listed on the transplant waiting list at both Baylor, Dallas, and Fort Worth. Kidney failure is prevalent in the males in my family. My son, LaTorre Gilbert, was transplanted in 2014 after his sister, Lucretia Gilbert, gave him a kidney. Everything went smooth, and thank God they are both doing great. Aside from my kidneys, I am in good health. I've been active in my community and volunteering at my church. I've had several offers from people I didn't know to be tested to donate, but they either had the wrong blood type or were ruled out for health reasons. By the way, my blood type is B positive. I am pursuing a living donor for 2 reasons. Kidneys from living donors last on average twice as long as kidneys from deceased donors, and the waiting list for a deceased donor kidney could be more than 5 years, so time is not on our side. Here's some basic information about kidney donation. We are born with an extra kidney. You only need one to live a full, healthy, long life. The majority of the donor surgery is done laparoscopically with tiny incisions. After a 1 or 2 day hospital stay, the recuperation period is usually fairly quick, generally 2 weeks. The cost of your evaluation and surgery will be covered by my insurance. The hospital will have the best surgeons and will give you extensive info on my insurance. You will have a separate team of healthcare professionals to evaluate you as a living donor. The job of these professionals is to help you understand the risks and benefits and look out for your best interests. To learn more, go to NKF website. Online, www.kidney.org www.mhsart.org/livingdonation. Thank you for reading my story. Please share with as many people as possible and consider giving the gift of love and hope. To get started, enter livingdonationdallas.org or livingdonationfortworth.org into your browser to complete an online health questionnaire, which will be reviewed by my living donor coordinator. To contact me directly, please email me at larry63045@gmail.com. Letter was just nonsense. Will Coggan, Managing Director, Center for Consumer Freedom, writes, last week, Oswald Ames wrote a letter urging families to stop buying meat to save the planet from climate change. The author suggested plant-based fake meat was a better option. Choking down ultra-processed meat alternatives won't save the planet, and it could be bad for your health. Eliminating meat one day per week would make no meaningful difference in total emissions in the U.S. livestock, including all the animals that are not consumed, are responsible for roughly 5% of greenhouse gas emissions, according to the EPA. The University of Florida found families would save more emissions by adjusting their home's thermostat or observing the speed limit to waste less gas. Some people think the term plant-based means meat alternatives are healthier. This is deceptive marketing. While meat is filled with proteins and vitamins, faux meat burgers are ultra-processed and filled with questionable additives. The USDA notes that 30 to 40% of food is wasted. To help the environment, eat what you want, just make sure not to waste it. Masks are no longer required. Doug Moss, Odessa. Long, long time ago, people in the USA existed without face masks. Then the grand poobah of our government, Dr. Anthony Fauci, declared they are necessary to prevent the spread of the terribly deadly COVID-19 virus. Then he said masks were not useful except for medical personnel. Then he said masks are critical to prevent the spread of COVID-19 virus. In addition to separating by 6 feet from others, not gathering, not visiting elderly relatives or neighbors. Well, using a paper fiber mask to prevent passage of anything as small as a virus is exactly like relying on window screens to keep dust out of your West Texas house. Do you understand? Do you really understand? The mask is simply a matter of citizenry in obedience to unelected czarist commands, but these commands are exposed as false on their face. By what measure do I state such? We are experiencing travel restrictions domestically and internationally, except for anyone and everyone crossing our southern border in violation of our immigration law. Those children and adults stream across that border into our country without masks, without vaccinations, and without visas. By the way, a visa is our government granting permission to a foreigner to enter the United States for a specified purpose. It's like someone ringing your doorbell or knocking on your door. When you open the door, you don't automatically let them in if you do not know them. The legal term defining a foreign person who enters our country in violation of our law is illegal alien. Such person is alien to our country not only by nation of origin, but also by culture, language, and customs. Now they are also in violation of Czar Dr. Fauci's ever-changing edicts in pursuit of a virus-free nation. These people, especially the teenagers, are being dispersed through our country to places and into homes unknown to us. Accusations of sexual assault of teens in detention in a facility in San Antonio, Texas, have forced its closure. A home in Midland, Texas, was found to house 30-plus illegal aliens. A home in Houston, Texas, was found to house 80-plus illegal aliens. A boat loaded with illegal aliens capsized off the San Diego, California coast. An SUV packed with 20-plus illegal aliens was involved in Iraq. All these events occurred during the past week or so and are only a reported sampling of what is ongoing now. In all of this, no masks, no 6 feet separation, no personal hygiene, no regard for crowding, no vaccinations, no compliance with U.S. immigration law. Who pays the price? We law-abiding citizens and law-abiding legal residents. If all this is okay and under management by the Biden administration, why not house these folks in the fenced area of our nation's capital complex?
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.